This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, February 3rd. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. This hasn't been exactly a feel-good campaign. Then came this from Bernie Sanders. John Cassidy and Ryan Lizza join me to explain how a 74-year-old white guy from Brooklyn, with the help of a Simon & Garfunkel anthem from 1968, has won the passions of so many of the country's youngest voters. Also, whether the Democratic Party, like the Republicans, is having an identity crisis. Ryan, what about that ad?
Well, it sums up at least part of the Sanders campaign, which is that it taps into a lot more idealism and makes you feel good in a way that Hillary Clinton's campaign doesn't, at least for a lot of voters, it seems. But it can be sometimes frustratingly light on specifics, although I think Sanders has gotten a little bit better in fleshing out his ideas. You know, that ad, it makes you feel good. It doesn't tell you anything about where he wants the country to go. Am I being too cynical?
No, but I just want to pause about this ad for a second because, well, first of all, it doesn't quote, as far as I can remember, the part about buying a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner's pies, whatever those were. I mean, it was 1968. So this is a nostalgia from before these young voters were born. So what gets voters in their 20s so excited about him?
It's funny that it's such an old song, because obviously the big divide in the Iowa caucus results was that she did overwhelmingly well with older voters, and he did very, very well with younger voters. And I don't want to speak for millennials, but maybe a song like this has been out of play for so long, it's cool again, and there's something kind of cool about the 60s era politics that young people find enchanting, right? I mean, he's tapping into that.
John, you look like you're ready to say something.
Yeah, I think it goes to this sort of authenticity question. I mean, I think millennials in all sorts of fields are looking for something more authentic. But most millennials, I don't think, knew who Bernie Sanders was a couple of years ago. I mean, we're grizzled old political correspondents. We've seen him for 30 years. But he's a new figure on the scene if you're a 20-something. And he's got a new message. From the outside, it sometimes seems like a very negative message about the billionaires stealing the country and rising inequality. It's sort of apocalyptic. But the way he presents it is very hopeful, you know, the sort of idea that it can take the country back and return America to its roots, which may be mythical because it's always been a really divided country. I think he taps into that sort of Reaganist optimism in some ways. I mean, I just wrote about that in a post. If you go and watch a Sanders rally, young adults are really enthusiastic and optimistic and sort of idealistic, the phrase that Ryan used. Clinton, although I think she's trying to sort of replicate that, has had a big problem doing that because she's so much part of the political world we've known for so long.
But what's happened to Obama's younger voters, the voters who were so completely catalyzed, especially by his first campaign? He talked about hope and change. He seemed to be the bridge to the 21st century that Bill Clinton had talked about. Also, under his presidency, Americans have been experiencing an economic expansion. Normally, that alone would have been enough to get another Democrat elected. What's different this time?
The economy is an interesting one. You have to distinguish between the short term and the long term, I think. In the short term, things are pretty good. We know we've had these 5 years of strong job growth, unemployment rates down to 5%, below 5%. GDP growth, it was slow in the last quarter, but it's been pretty good. We've had a 5 years of economic recovery. You would say that should benefit the incumbent. Hillary is, to all extents and purposes, the incumbent. The problem is that sort of modest recovery we've had is superimposed on 30 or 40 years of very disappointing economic numbers, wage stagnation, rising inequality, frustrated expectations, a general feeling that the so-called American dream, whatever that is not being fulfilled anymore. And Sanders, I think, is really tapping into that sort of narrative. Also with his stuff about, you know, the only people who've really done well in the last 20 or 30 years are Wall Street and the bankers. That really, I think, jibes with what a lot of ordinary people, and not just young people, Sanders is appealing to some older people too, how they now view the world. Whereas Hillary, she comes out of the Clinton-Blair tradition, which was as long as we have economic growth, it'll filter down to the average person. So what we've got to do is just focus everything on getting growth and good business conditions. That doesn't really jibe with young voters.
In the 80s, the Democratic Party seemed to be in a death spiral, and it was saved in large part by Clinton and Gore, who were then the vibrant, young, moderate Democrats. And that was the third way of Tony Blair and the rest, and it was a huge movement. We aren't really seeing that yet, despite what we're hearing from Sanders.
Sanders, I think, does represent a genuine sort of populist movement. He's inherited the sort of Occupy Wall Street movement, the Elizabeth Warren movement. I think we see now if Elizabeth Warren had run, she'd have been a formidable candidate.
Yes.
Whether she'd have been as formidable as Bernie, I don't know. But there is actually a populist movement out there. The Democratic Party base is a lot more liberal than it was 20 years ago, I think. So people are willing to give Bernie's left-wing views a hearing in the way they weren't. And on the other side, the sort of Clinton-Blair tradition, sometimes called neoliberalism, although they wouldn't accept that label, I think has had a sort of crisis of confidence after the financial crisis and the sort of revelation that we've had 30 years of wage stagnation. What has happened is that the progressive tradition, after being in the doldrums for 20 or 30 years, is now resurgent, and the moderate Blair Clinton wing of the party really hasn't come up with a coherent alternative, not one that inspires young voters.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, but isn't it, John, they won. Their project in the 80s and 90s was victorious. They reoriented the Democratic Party after three Democratic losses in the presidency. They won two terms. And I always thought that the whole point of that reorientation was so that they could move forward with a more progressive agenda, which is sort of what happened in the post-Clinton years as the party turned left. So if you look at it that way, the project that they undertook is no longer necessary. And that strategy is sort of dated now, right?
No, I agree it is. I mean, I just think Hillary's having trouble sort of straddling the divide. You know, I remember I did the 88 campaign. You know, people thought the Democratic Party was finished after that. So the Blair and Clinton project was, as you say, a great success. They achieved a lot, not just electoral victory. There was quite a lot of sort of redistribution, the earned income tax credit, things like that. Eventually, if you look at Obama as the sort of heir to the moderate tradition, it did generate the Affordable Care Act and lots more liberal reforms, which aren't strictly economics. It sort of reached a crisis, though, in dealing with the aftermath of the Great Recession and the whole inequality, wage stagnation issue.
And Ryan, that's what has struck me, too, in the last week or so. Everyone's been so focused on the Donald Trump phenomenon and the rage of the right-wing populace. But the Democratic Party has a real problem here. So tell us a little bit more about how you see that playing out. You were at the Iowa caucuses. Do you see something bigger forming here in response to the Clinton wing of the party?
First thing to say is that Hillary Clinton is actually more liberal, certainly, than her husband, at least by the end of his administration.
On domestic policy.
And she's more liberal. She's to the left of Barack Obama on a whole series of issues. You know, she's been around politics long enough that she knows where the center in her party is, and that center has been moving left, and she's been moving left with it. Now, of course, along comes a socialist who pushes, at least in the primaries, the debate a few clicks even further left. You know, it's not good enough to improve upon Obamacare. You have to tear it up and do a Medicare for All program. On both sides, we do seem to have, 25 to 30, maybe 40% of the party that is responding to a much more populist critique of what's going on in Washington. I think part of it is just frustration that Washington has been dysfunctional for the past few years, but surely a big part of it is the wage stagnation that John was talking about and the sort of anemic recovery since the financial crisis. So both parties have this sort of turmoil in the base. And so far, I think the Democrats are doing a little bit better in terms of an economic agenda responding to it. The Republicans still just think they can snuff the Trump populism out and it'll go away and everyone will rally around Marco Rubio or whoever it is that has the sort of traditional tax cutting and deregulation agenda that really doesn't speak to the economic woes that Trump has tapped into.
When you think about young Democrats coming up through the ranks, the Republicans have Rubio. The Democrats don't seem to have a Rubio, and Republicans are gaining huge numbers of legislative seats at the state level. They have, what, two-thirds of the governor's mansions? So talk a little bit about how that could affect the future of the party.
So, I mean, I think the Democrats do appeal to the youth, so they don't have a youth problem. The youth is to the left of the center of the party, it appears. That's good news for the party, that they've got a lot of people who are mobilized, who are interested in politics, and who are going to be part of the Democratic Party for the next 20, 30 years. The problem is that the actual party itself has lost its young bench, largely due to what's been happening at the local level over the last 10 or 15 years. Some of it's redistricting, some of it is anti-Obama feeling in the South. If you look back to the 80s, what rescued it, it was the Southern governors, Clinton and Gore. Now, they really don't exist anymore, Democratic Southern governors, to a large extent. Places like Arkansas and Tennessee are now completely run by the Republicans. That's one of the reasons the party has gone all in on Hillary, I think. If you take Hillary away, who's the alternative candidate? Where's the young Marco Rubio type on the center left? Ryan, who follows this stuff more closely than I do, do you think there's anybody out there, Ryan?
No, except it's one of the underreported stories of the Obama era is just how devastated at the state and local level the Democrats have been. It's the 2010 and 2014 elections. That's where the next crop of senators and governors who would have looked at the 2016 presidential campaign would have come from, right? They would have been elected in 2010, or, you know, if they were politically active at the state level, they would have taken that step up to a governor's mansion or the Senate, and they're just not out there. And the few that are, you know, big state governors like Andrew Cuomo in New York, he probably would have run if Hillary hadn't. So two things. One, the bench is very weak, and then she was so powerful, it just had the party apparatus so locked up that a few remaining governors and senators who might have run decided to take a pass because she was too tough.
And all of this raises questions about Hillary's running mate, if she gets that far, which seems likely. But one more question, Ryan, about Obama and all of the excitement and all of the grassroots activism that he took advantage of brilliantly in 2008. What has happened to all of those supporters?
Part of it is that the Obama campaign, as it transitioned from the campaign into government, didn't really see keeping that grassroots engaged as a major priority and didn't have a plan for them. And the DNC, which should have been responsible for that, sort of fell down on the job. And then if there's no role for you in the Obama administration, if you're a young activist who is very excited about Obama, but there's no apparatus that's connecting you to the government, you sort of drift away and do other things with your life, right? I think the other thing is people got very disillusioned, especially after the 2010 midterm elections, when the entire Obama agenda just sort of screeched to a stop and the dysfunction in Washington took over. And a lot of the high expectations that Obama set in his campaign were dashed, which brings you to the Hillary-Bernie fight. Hillary's sort of saying, let's not do that again. Let's not get expectations too high here. Let's work within the system, figure out what can be accomplished in a system of government that is almost designed for gridlock. And Sanders is saying, no, 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 we need a political revolution. If you saw last night when he was asked about how you're going to get this stuff done, his answer was very Obama-like, right? Obama in 2008 used to say, we've got to fix our politics before we can fix the policy. And Hillary Clinton used to roll her eyes at that. And now Sanders is doing the same thing, right? He's saying he can't do it alone. He needs this massive awakening in the electorate and all these new people to flood into the system. That's the only way he could actually win and pass his agenda.
What about the grassroots movements we've been seeing? You mentioned Occupy earlier. There have been very successful efforts at city and state levels to lobby for a rise in the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter is growing all the time. So we are seeing these outbreaks. Are they adding up to something significant?
I think they are. I mean, it's not just in the U.S. as well. We're seeing these sort of populist movements springing up all over Europe, forming different political parties in parts of Europe, Syriza in Greece and Podemos in Spain. Part of it's the impact of technology. It's much easier to mobilize people online through social networks, etc., than it used to be. And Bernie's very good at that. The Sanders campaign is largely online, just as Obama's was. So I think it does matter. But I think, where are we? We're just before the New Hampshire primary. This was always going to be Hillary Clinton's tricky spot, the first two primaries. We really have to wait and see what happens in New Hampshire. Does she mount a bit of a comeback? If she even finishes close, it will be a good result for her. And then move on to Nevada and South Carolina. If Bernie's still running strong after South Carolina, you know, we've got a huge, huge story. But if she comes back and wins comfortably in South Carolina, as most people think she will, and ekes out a victory in Nevada, then things will look very differently at the end of February than they did at the start of February.
And then, Ryan, final question. If she gets that far, is that enough for her going forward to help realign the Democratic Party, or do more significant measures need to be taken?
Even if Bernie does well in South Carolina and the race goes on for a while, you still have to imagine that she's the favorite to win in the long term, even if he mounts a much stronger challenge than anyone anticipates right now. And so in the general election, the thing that she'll need is to excite the coalition that Obama put together in 08 and 2012, and that's young people, much larger percentages of non-white voters than the Democrats had been able to turn out before 2008, while holding their own with the white vote. I think that's an open question. Is the African-American support and the support in the Latino community that Obama was able to win, does that really translate to any Democrat, or is it something just unique to who he is? We don't have an answer to that yet. And if Sanders somehow taps into non-white voters in the primaries and exposes a weakness that Hillary Clinton has with that segment of the Democratic electorate, that'll give us some evidence about how strong or weak she is in the general.
Okay, thank you both very much. Ryan Lissa is the magazine's Washington correspondent. John Cassidy is a staff writer and the author of How Markets Fail, The Logic of Economic Calamities. This is The Political Scene. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.
You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts in the iTunes store. You can find past episodes of The New Yorker Out Loud, The Political Scene, and The New Yorker's fiction and poetry podcasts at NewYorker.com/podcast. The weekly audio edition of The New Yorker is available at Audible.com.